Wingardium Leviosa. No, Leviosa. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name is Dustin.
And I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 136. And it's just the two of us.
What is it? What song is that?
It's by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Kenny is, what is he? Where is he? Like, is he just on vacation or something? I don't know.
Honestly, dude, I was waiting on you to tell me because I don't know.
Sometimes
he's just like, I'm not going to be there. And we're like, why? And he doesn't tell us much. He's just like, I just can't.
Yeah, so like he has a nomadic life that causes him to be gone regularly. Nolan and I are pretty systematic on our scheduling, and so like we're here. Well, at least one and a half of us yeah. are. Nolan, on top of Kenny being gone, is dying from tuberculosis, it sounds yeah, like.
It sucks. There's not a cure for it, so I kind of just have to die and deal with it.
This is the last game you're going to play. We'll find out if it was worth
it. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Let's hop in. So E3 is this week, Nolan, and Ooh. It's shaping up to actually be a big one. Like, I'm super yeah. interested. Last year, I wasn't really, just because there wasn't much coming around the corner, or so it seemed. So I know that you've looked into it some. We talked about it some in Discord. Is there anything that you're hoping to see this year?
Yeah, and it's all from Nintendo. Big surprise. There are just some, like, things that have been leaked and rumored, and I think it's that list that you told us a few episodes back.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm thinking some of those things are going to be true. So there's going to be more Prime 4 gameplay, Metroid Prime 4, which is cool. I hope to see a new Fire Emblem title.
Yeah.
Maybe a Zelda title for the Switch.
New Zelda?
Yeah, so... Dang. Not Breath of the Wild style, but more so like a top-down Zelda.
Yeah,
I think it would be really cool on the Switch. It'd be perfect because it's a portable system. I just think that would work. And then I hope to learn more about their online system and kind of how they're going to go about doing the virtual console with the retro gaming on it.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. Are you excited at all about like the new Pokemon, not like the remake? Let's just try to get everybody to play Snap, not Snap. What?
That'd be sick.
Pokemon.
Pikachu Go?
Yeah. Well, Pikachu Go and the Eevee thing and all that. They're trying to, I feel like that one, they're just trying to get everybody to go around and, play the mobile one that I can't even think of the name right now.
Pokemon Go.
Oh, Pokemon Go. That's good. But there's rumors of a brand new Pokemon title.
Oh, yeah. So they talked about that last year, and I thought that the Pokemon Go thing, the Pikachu and Eevee Go thing, was that.
Was that?
But apparently not. I don't know if they'll go into that at E3 or if they'll just kind of spotlight the Pikachu and Eevee thing, but it's totally just like, I mean, it's so smart, actually, because Pokemon Go was huge in like everyone's life, not just gamers. So if they can market to that, like if they can tap into the non-gamer market for the Switch, then that's impressive.
Yeah,
I won't play
it. I don't know if it's going to work. You didn't mention, but I've got to bring up for you the new Smash title.
Oh, of course. I forgot about that. Smash 5, they've already said GameCube controllers are coming to the Switch. They didn't waste any time. They're like, you can get that. So that's definitely for Smash. So I hope we get some characters.
All right, I'll tell you mine.
Tell me.
So I'm playing Assassin's Creed Origins right now with my wife. And so they've Odyssey leaked, which is, I don't know if it'll be an entirely new game. I don't know. Yeah.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
Yeah.
Mario Odyssey. You can't.
And so there's another Odyssey out there too. What was it? No, maybe it was just Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I don't remember. But Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is Origins, is shaping up to be good right now. So I'm at least excited about that. Fallout 76, but I'm also worried that it's not going to be a full title.
Same.
Mega Man 11.
Oh my goodness, I forgot. I'm pre-ordering it for the Switch.
And I already know it's going to be there big time because I've seen like gamers and streamers that's been able to play like multiple hours of it and just say it's phenomenal.
Dude, that's really good news. I was worried it was all Flash.
I try to stay away from because I've been excited about and I don't want to kind of ruin story elements, but Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yes.
And then I am hoping, fingers crossed, that Final Fantasy VII Remake, that they will drop that the first episode is being released immediately.
Wait, first episode. Oh, that's coming out
They're making it episodic, remember?
Right.
And you know, it's been in talks for the longest time, but
yeah,
I'm hoping that it's finally we're going to be able to at least play the first episode.
I have a feeling that they're just going to table it and not talk about it, and it's just going to disappear into gaming development hell.
It wouldn't surprise me. And if that happens, it's going to leave me scarred on the forehead. Like the main character in our retro game of the week, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Overview.
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or Sorcerer's Stone. We read Sorcerer's Stone because we're in the States, right? Yeah. But philosophers for those outside of, because what? They didn't think that we would know, like we would be confused by philosophers?
I'm confused because, so I feel like parents at that time were like, oh, you can't read Harry Potter. It's witchcraft. Witches, so
well,
philosopher sounds nicer than sorcerer. Why change it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But philosopher over here is more like just like a wise person, you know, or like a,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, this game, whichever one you want to call it, it was released as Philosopher's Stone, I believe, is a kind of weird action adventure platform-esque game published by EA Games and released in 2001. It was initially developed for PlayStation, PC, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance. And was only a couple of years later remade for PlayStation 2, Xbox, and Nintendo GameCube. Like 2 years after its release.
That's which is crazy.
Yeah, a little like that causes some concern right off the bat.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's a straight up cash grab based off the movie.
Either that or they're like, okay, this game was trash and we have to fix everything.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But with that many consoles and five different developers in that few years, kind of like what you just said, it sounds straight up like a simple cash grab. But I'm going to argue some in this episode why I don't necessarily put it in that category with some of these other games like that.
I think I'll land somewhere near that too.
Well, we'll get to it. But we played the PlayStation version this week. You did too, right?
Yeah, PS1.
Okay, yeah. Because the different versions are different. Like
very.
Yeah, some of them, I think the PC and the PlayStation are relatively the same.
They're close.
But like the story elements are in different locations, and I think there's a lot more puzzles than platforming. But the Game Boy Color game is a role-playing game, like Final Fantasy.
Like what? On Game Boy?
And then the Game Boy Advance is a top-down puzzle game.
And you know, so I actually had that one.
You had that one?
Yeah, I had the Game Boy Advance one. Yeah.
Do you remember it being quality?
Yeah, I actually played it quite a bit. It was one of those, like puzzle, just kill some time games that can get addicting.
Super.
I mean, at the time, I don't know how it would hold up.
For sure. So it is based off and named the exact same as the first book in the Harry Potter series, a series that many people are very familiar with. Most have read. Nolan and I, and I'd throw Kenny in there, have read the entire series probably more than once.
I'm ashamed, and I've read it once.
Yeah.
But I kind of, like, growing up when the movies started coming out so quickly, I just started watching the movies, and then I went back and I read them.
I think, that's fine, because I'm trying to think if it's fine. But, like, you're younger than me, so that makes sense, but, and the movies are great. So,
they're
like,
so good.
It's one of those times where the movies, are in some ways equivalent to the books. I mean, the books I still think are far superior, but the movies hold up so well and represent the books so well. So
yeah, and there aren't many series out there that do that, that that off, you know?
No. Yeah, right. And though when you add a game into the mix, like when you add other media into the mix,
yeah,
that's where it gets questionable, because you're really going against the odds when you do that. Because if you can get a book and the movie to be great, it's very rare to see the other things come out and all of them be of equal value.
Yeah, because it gets ridiculous. It does start to become a cash grab. Like, you can't do it all, you know? But
right,
I would argue that maybe Star Wars did that, but they're not books, you know? Or they weren't initially.
And they are books now, at least. I mean, yeah, there's a great series, at least for Star Wars fans, but I don't think that they're widely, you know, accepted or read by just regular people. Regular people and then fans.
Normies. Muggles.
For this one, for Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the game, it's more or less in line with the story of the first book, though it does take some creative liberties throughout. That causes you to have some, I mean, to be a video game, it has to make things up. So for our game, you're primarily doing some puzzling platforms around Hogwarts and different familiar locations. You're doing a few battles here and there with some magical creatures or with Draco Malfoy and his goons. You do get to some Quidditch, which we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah.
But really, with that, your major set pieces throughout this game are directly pulled from the book, directly pulled from the movie, and are going to be very familiar to Harry Potter fans.
Gameplay.
So the game begins with a storybook telling of how Harry Potter became the boy who lived, before dropping you as Harry. You play obviously as Harry Potter. It drops you off at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry and instantly gives you a freedom that I wasn't expecting. Like you just mentioned, I thought it would be hand-holding. It would take me through, you know, some introductory things, but really, like, soon after it does the introductory thing and you meet Dumbledore at the beginning, it gives you the freedom not to go anywhere. There's some locked doors and there's places that are completely closed off where you're not allowed to go yet. But it gives you this relative freedom within Hogwarts that I completely wasn't expecting.
Same. Like, the environment that you get to explore is actually, yeah, I was like, for a PS1 title back then, game based off a movie, you get not an open world, that's silly to say, but you get a lot more than, like, you get to explore the castle, which is what I would want out of a Harry Potter game, you know?
Oh yeah, that you've got to have that. I mean, one of the most charming things and most, like, mysterious and enticing things about Harry Potter is Hogwarts. I mean, because
sure,
like, everybody's got the image of, like, moving staircases and talking portraits and you know, all of these magical things going on. And that's actually something that was kept here. Sure, it's not as large as what Hogwarts would be. And again, some things are locked, so they're only unlocked at certain times. It still kind of guides you. But once or twice this week, there were occasions where I got lost either in Hogwarts or on the grounds, not sure where to go or what to do next. And I'm not opposed to that when I'm in this magical, mysterious world that I, you know, that I've grown to love so much.
I'd say that was intentional from them. Like,
oh yeah.
But, and they do have a good tutorial though. Like, tutorials are kind of annoying and hard to do well, but, and you said something about they don't hold your hand. I felt like they did a little, but in a way that was necessary, like teaching you the controls and kind of how to interact with the world around you. And so it starts off by, like, you meet Ron, and then you learn that Malfoy took Hedwig, your owl, and you have to go get him back. And so through that little, like, plot device, like, nodding to the story, which doesn't quite happen in the books, but that's how you go through and you learn, you know, like, how to jump, how to move. And again, platforming, like, I didn't realize there would be that much platforming, which was really cool.
it's, and you've got to bear with me, I'm not making an over comparison here, but okay, I do see some of the platforming elements being similar to Ocarina of Time.
Okay, just jumping gaps, like running up.
I mean, other games jump gaps. One of the things that I was most surprised about in Ocarina of Time when I've been playing it for the very first time is that there's not a jump button that you kind of just hold in the direction that you're going to go. And you're probably so familiar with that. I'm not, and I prefer a jumping button. But similarly in this game, yeah, you've got gaps that you have to jump. You've got moving platforms up and down, left and right. And you've got to time your jumps by just holding forward in the direction that you need to go. And similarly, the camera is kind of controlled by your bumper, you know, your bumpers. Yep. And I just felt some similarities there. Also, like, if you kind of miss your jump, or not kind of, but like you're not quite there, then Harry will still grab onto the ledge, pull himself up like Link would.
Yeah,
in
you're
Ocarina
right.
Of Time.
You're right. I didn't even think about that. But
so there's some similarities there. Totally different games, but I think some of the platforming might be familiar to Ocarina of Time fans.
Yeah, some of the other controls while we're here. So on PS1, it's triangle, and that's your kind of look around the room camera button.
You can't move during that time.
You cannot move. You can cast a spell during it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty helpful. But later you also learn that R1 is an aiming mechanic for your spell, so I use that more often than the triangle.
Like it locks on, or
no, it wasn't a lock on, was it? It was.
Well,
more
I know that you can lock on and cycle through things, but maybe that gets you into that mode, and then you get locked on.
Yeah, like I actually had some trouble shooting. So the first spell you have is the Flipendo knockback jinx. So it's just a simple, like, I don't know, that's your most basic get hit spell, I guess, that they could come up with,
which I think that's created for this. I don't remember Flipendo being used
I kind of do.
Okay,
I kind of remember Flipendo, but I don't know, I might be making it up. It wasn't a major story thing in the books, we'll say that. But yeah, so that's the first one you have, and like in the early stages in that tutorial, I think you're helping Neville get through a room of flying books. So I appreciated that piece of lore was there, that Neville's still a meme. But I was having trouble aiming and hitting things, and I was like point blank range. So that was definitely something in there that struggled with the controllers.
Some of the other spells that you get is Wingardium Leviosa.
Leviosa.
And then you've got a fire spell as well. That can set things on fire, and there's a couple more spells that you get throughout your time at Hogwarts.
Yeah, I can't. Wait, what's the fire one called? Just make sure.
Incendiary. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something like that. And then you've got another. I think you get another spell later where you can turn like a statue of an eagle into an actual eagle, like yes, give life to something. So you've got a few different spells. I actually enjoyed the little mini game that you play to learn the spells. I thought it was actually quite interesting.
And now that you brought up Ocarina of Time similarities, that stuck in my head. I see a similarity here too.
To learning the Ocarina songs?
Yes, where you learn the songs and you have to press the buttons. But in this game, it's a little different. And yeah, it is a mini game. Like your X, square, circle, and triangle buttons come up on the screen in a circle. And the teacher that's teaching you the spell moves the cursor in a timed fashion to the different buttons. And you have to time it and hit the button when the thing goes over the cursor.
And the idea is you're moving your wand in that sequence as you're trying to learn how to do the correct motion with your wand so that you can cast that spell.
Right. I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, so it was really cool. It was hard because you had to do it multiple times and it sped up each time, but it was cool. The only thing that was a bummer is that then that doesn't really come back into play. That's how you learn the spell and then you know the spell.
Yeah.
And then one of the things that I just felt like they could have done better here is that when you come up to obstacles in your journey, you're not allowed to guess what spell to use. And I thought that would have been somewhat creative. I don't know how they could have done it, but you know, you've got 4, 5, 6 different spells at your disposal by the end of this game. it would have been really cool if you come up to obstacles and you've got to figure out which spell to use, but you don't have any option. When you come to an obstacle, there's a little glimmer over the obstacle.
Yeah.
And then all you do is press your wand button and it forces you to use the correct spell as if they're like just glorified keys to unlock the next phase of a puzzle.
Right. And I'm with you. I really would have appreciated like a robust start menu that would let you cycle through your spells.
Dang,
and equip them. Like, because, and at first I thought they were going to do that because when you get the Leviosa spell, the sparkle above it that indicates like, hey, you can interact with this. It was a different color. And he was right. Like, this is yellow. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's how they're going to indicate what spell you need to use. But no, it's just kind of done for you.
Yeah, but then you just press the button. Yeah. And now I'm going to sound like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, because maybe they do this in future installments of this game, because they created this whole series. And from what I've gathered, and I played some of them are great and some of them are pretty trashy. Mm-hmm. But the first book in the Harry Potter series, because I've gone back and I've read them just recently, it's very childish. It's not as well written as some of the later ones. It's very short. It's very elementary in some ways. And so I'm actually kind of okay. Then I'm kind of going back on myself now, because while I could have preferred a more robust system, I think I'm okay with this first game in the series being elementary in some of these ways and being kid friendly in some of these ways, because maybe a more robust system would be more difficult for other Harry Potter fans.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So maybe I'm the one that started like, oh, I would have rather this, but I'm okay with the decision they made, I guess.
I still would have liked it, because like, I think even when you are translating a quote unquote kid's story, so let's take Toy Story, for example, that game is a platformer, but it's very hard. And I'm okay with that too, because when you're taking a piece of media and you're putting it into gaming, to a video game, I think it first and foremost needs to cater to gamers, not to a potential Harry Potter fan. And that's probably just my opinion. I know it's smart for them to keep it catered to that audience, but from a gaming perspective, I get frustrated when it's not catered to me, you know? But yeah, it wasn't like deal breaking at all. I just thought it would have been cool to add that. Something I really loved though, from a gamer's perspective, are the collectibles in this game. It reminded me of Banjo-Kazooie. You get... Okay.
Are you talking about the cards or the beans? Or something different?
The cards? You mean the...
Witches and Wizards.
Yeah, the folios. Cards. Yeah. So there are these like secret cards that you can find usually behind like a hidden bookcase door or whatever. And you can collect those, and they're different characters from they're different lore pieces. And then, yeah, the beans and the house points.
Yeah, so I like some of those, dislike some of those. I love the Witches and Wizards cards, because those are they're in the story, like in the actual books and the movies. And man, if I was in that world, I would be collecting all of those, right? And it was super cool. Like every time I collected one, I actually went to the book because I wanted to know who this character was from the magical world.
I wasn't that committed.
Thought that was super cool. The beans, yeah. I mean, if you're gonna have a collectible, that then the Bernie bots every flavor
terrible
magical bean, something like that. But there's four different colored beans throughout your game, and once you collect a certain amount of each of a certain one, you go to Fred and George Weasley, and they give you the password for a portrait in the school. Then you have to find that portrait and give the password, and it opens up to a room that was previously unavailable to you. The coolest thing, I don't know if you were able to open any, but the first one I opened let me come up to this pedestal that was raised at the top of these stairs, and I was able to upgrade my broomstick and receive the Nimbus 2000.
Oh, that's... I wish I would have done that.
It was
actually super
epic, because you do have Quidditch in this game, which
yes,
we haven't
even
talked about. I think you can go onto the Quidditch pitch at any time and kind of just practice, but you've got some scheduled games throughout, like, I think you've three, maybe four different games, like actual Quidditch games that you play as a part of this plot. And that's super interesting. And I thought they implemented Quidditch pretty well. It was tough, yeah. Like super tough. But you, as Harry, you're the seeker, and you're trying, and you have to fly through these rings. And once you fly through the certain amount of rings, and you're having to dodge the bludgers,
yep.
I don't know if that's what it's called, but you're having to dodge those balls that are being hit towards you. And once you've gone through all the rings, then you like race the other seeker from the other team to get that golden snitch.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised that they included that in the game, because I was like, okay, you've got limitations here. If you're going to make a game on Harry Potter, you can't put it all in there. There's so many different things you could go. Like some games are completely committed to Quidditch, I believe, but it was in there. And yeah, I thought it worked. Like it was that classic for around that time of gaming where you're on the broomstick and you have to go through rings, like hoops. This is in the training sessions or whatever that teaches you to just kind of navigate. That gets you some house points if you can get them all. But I thought it was kind of hard though. Like I had some difficulty flying around.
Oh, it's super hard, especially with the camera, the broom. I was using save states this week, so I was able to practice. Without that, it would have been a lot more practicing, but I eventually got it down to where I was maneuvering fairly well on a broomstick. But it's not easy.
No, but that's another thing that I thought was pretty cool, though. Like, speaking of footage, it's not just a platformer. It's not just an adventure game. There's mini games all throughout. There's another one that I stumbled upon like on accident, and I don't remember who it was, if it was Neville or somebody, but I don't remember what the problem was, but there's a counter, and then pumpkins fly up and frogs fly up, and you have to just hit them with your Flippendo spell as they jump up, which was the most pointless like mini game, but I still found myself enjoying those little treats here and there throughout the game. So the gameplay, it's hard to really pinpoint where it shines, because I think it does all of those things a little bit and does them well.
Now, after saying that, I've got to be honest here in the gameplay section. And I want to know what your thoughts are on this, but okay. So we had 2 weeks to play this game because we did a retro recap in the middle. And truth be told, like throughout these last 14 days of playing this game, I found myself getting bored. Like I'd be intrigued for about 30 to 45 minutes of playtime, and then I wouldn't care anymore. And so I'd put it away, and then I'd come back to it, you know, a day or two later. I'd play, and then I'd be intrigued for again 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I just wouldn't care anymore. And I don't know what it is, and I don't know exactly how to put it out. And I've got some ideas, like maybe it wasn't challenging enough in many areas, mm-hmm. or I was kind of just like being led to one area and then I had to do platforming puzzles and then led to another area and do platforming puzzles. So maybe it was redundant or repetitious, but I just found myself getting bored quite often. I don't know if you felt the same.
Yeah, a little bit. I can 100% understand why you did. And I think what we have here is one of those games that the flaw in the gameplay and keeping it interesting is that you're not rewarded for progression as much as you should be. Like in other games, let's just take Ocarina of Time again, for example, since we've been saying it. You're getting new items in the dungeons. You're putting them to use outside the world. You're getting new enemies to fight. You're getting money, and then you can buy new items. You're just getting rewarded and new things are coming up. In this game, you're pretty much just rewarded with more progression, like maybe a new area that's, you know, nothing too special. So I think that's something they definitely could have improved on is, I don't know, just giving you cool things more often. I don't know.
You do get, new spells. See, I think, and here's the limitation. You do get new spells, but it's not like that changes anything because
right.
you can't decide which spells you're using. So right. it really just then you use that spell on the next set of puzzles, just like you would use one of the other spells. So your yeah. spells aren't that unique, you know? It's just like use the new spell that you got. Like, for example, there's this one section after you get the spell that transforms an inanimate object into a real animal. You're needing to change these statues into animals so that they go away, and then these tables can float and you can get on to get to the next area. Well, okay. Sure, but you could have just used your Leviosa
yeah.
to move that statue off the table, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's not really like creative puzzling for me. It's more just, and you're not, your new spells don't really mean anything.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the only bummer here.
That's
for
true.
Me.
Aged.
Okay, so huge, huge thing we need to discuss because it's so in your face the whole time, graphics. PlayStation 1 era graphics are, I love them, to be honest with you. It's very nostalgic for me.
Is that nostalgia?
It's nostalgia. It's hilarious. Like, to go back and be like, this was cutting edge back in the day.
Sure.
So what did you think revisiting those?
Here's the thing. I think some PlayStation 1 graphics are endearing, and you can go back and be like, okay, they're not the best, but they're still good. I don't care for as much. I think other PlayStation 1 games did it better, which duh, but I just feel like the textures are old here. I mean, the all of your images are really jaggedy. I think there's good color, but I think when you can see every pixel, then it's bad and kind yeah. of breaking at that point. So I don't think it's atrocious. I really don't. Again, we're PlayStation era.
Yeah.
But it is noticeable, and it is an aging factor here.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with the environments. I thought those were fine. It's more so just the faces of the characters being so bad. And
so bad.
But surprisingly, like, I noticed or could tell who people were. Like, Madame Hooch, I was like, oh, that kind of looks like her, actually,
yeah.
just in a demon form. It was yeah. just weird.
Yeah. And one of the things that I sincerely appreciate here and is that they didn't go for exact character likeness from the movies.
Yeah.
I actually like that because if you're going, and we'll talk about voices in just a moment, but if you're going to have different voices, I'm okay with them paying homage to, but not doing identical. So like Hermione, for example,
yeah.
she looks different than Emma Watson portrayed her in the first movie. You can tell it's the same freckles, red, you know, a crazy hair. But it's different enough, but you still know exactly who it is. And so I appreciated that.
Yeah.
The voices, because I mentioned that, let's talk about them now.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be bad because it's not the voices from the movie. The voices
right.
that we're familiar as Harry, as Ron, as Hermione, as Snape, as Dumbledore. But from the moment I heard Dumbledore's voice when he came down those steps and talked to me, I was like, okay, that's not the Dumbledore's voice that I'm familiar with, but that is a Dumbledore voice.
Yeah. So I felt that with Ron's. I thought Ron's was spot on. Yeah, that was a little unexpected. Really quality, and I enjoyed it. And here's my thing. I think they knew this, and so they knew not to touch and to try to identically recreate from the movies all of that stuff and from the books, because that's where you get tripped up, because if you mess one little detail up, then fans are going to be pissed.
And it throws it all off.
And it throws
yeah.
it off. So, like, that was smart and safe of them to go that route. And the voice acting was great. It was so good.
Yeah, I thought voices were on point. And then the thing that probably threw me for a loop the most is the music. Mm. I was not expecting good music here. And maybe I should have. Maybe I just went – I went into this game expecting one thing – and that just not being what it was. I was just
right.
expecting it to be a cash grab. I was expecting it to be, you know, just like, let's throw a game out there. But Here's the thing, and I think I told you earlier this week when I found out, the composer for this game is Jeremy Soule, who has been described as the John Williams of video game music. He composed Elder Scrolls, Guild Wars, and Knights of the Old Republic.
Wait.
This guy is a genius, yeah. And they were able to get him to compose this first Harry Potter game.
Yeah, he got that cash. They could afford it.
Right. I think that's what it is. I think maybe that is what it is, because this game, while, and we'll talk about it, but it doesn't, like, there's clear issues with it.
Sure.
But maybe they just had enough money to compensate. Like, some of the issues, and they're like, all right, we'll get one of the best composers. We'll get some great voice acting. We'll get, you know, this and that. Like, they were able to just put the money there and make it happen.
And it kind of worked. Like, I first heard the music and I was like, okay, that's not the Harry Potter theme song. So they had to go different with it, right? But it ended up being good. It sounded like magical school music, you know?
Yeah.
So it was on point.
I thought from the music underlying the Quidditch tournament and the music from the start screen and the music at the beginning to welcome you to Hogwarts, the music at Gringotts when you get there eventually, like, I thought all of that actually worked well. A lot of the things were atmospheric. When you go down into the basement or the dungeons of Hogwarts, there's not necessarily music there, but you've got this like hollowy, echoey effect. Yeah. I just think with the soundscape of what they did in this game, it was not what I expected, and very pleasantly so.
Sure. So you mentioned some of those gameplay limitations. I think for me, a big one, and it didn't happen a ton because you're not always using your Flippendo spell, but aiming spells was the most frustrating thing to me this week. I would have loved an aim, what is it called? Aim assist,
sure.
Something built into the game that kind of helped with that. Like, not making it just completely easy, but just better than what it was. It was rough.
Well, and especially with like console, right? Like, you've got your controller and your thumbsticks or whatever.
Yeah.
That's never. Or no, you've got your D-pad with PlayStation, but
D-pad.
It's not the easiest to track these things. Thankfully, you don't have to really do it tons.
Not a ton.
When it's like the puzzling elements, it's more so like it's kind of just automatically locked on.
Yeah.
But there are like battles that you have to be able to aim, free aim, and it's definitely not easy.
But if you're a player like me, you tried to shoot everything you saw when you first saw it just to see what would happen. So that might be my fault for getting frustrated with that. But
if you're into that, you're going to find some secrets in Hogwarts.
Yes, you are.
Which is just another super endearing thing that behind bookshelves, behind fake walls, there's always going to be some kind of secret there, and it's super endearing.
Yeah. Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every episode, we determine whether or not this game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down for the game.
This is going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting. It requires 2/3 of the vote typically, but I think what we've kind of decided when it comes down to two people, it's like we've got to either agree or it just doesn't get it. I expected this to be a bad game for the last time from me. Typically, when video games are quickly produced from successful franchises, they are simple cash grabs. This game has many redeeming qualities. For Harry Potter fans, I would say to start here, as you play through the Harry Potter video game series, it's a good beginning. You'll have a lot of fun visiting Hogwarts and Gringotts and playing Quidditch. And I think it's a good beginner game to a good series. But for everyone else, like just for the casual modern gamer, I'm going to say that you should skip this game. It's not a bad game. It's really not, but it's, in my opinion, it's definitely not a must play. So I say no New Game Plus status for me.
Hmm. That's interesting. Because
you're going the other way.
I'm going the other way. I think so. I agree 100% with everything you said, though. It's definitely not easy to just jump back into. The controls are slower and finicky at times, and of course the graphics are going to be something that you just laugh at. But I think that's why you need to go back and play it, because it's such a good representation of gaming at the time and adventure games at the time. So I'm even thinking Banjo-Kazooie, even though Banjo-Kazooie is a 10 times more quality game than this. I'm considering that this is based on a movie, based on a book, and yeah, I really think they put a lot of time and effort into making it good for gamers. So I think it would be a fun thing to revisit. So I do give it New Game Plus.
That's interesting. Okay, Kenny's not here with us.
Right.
But if he was, he'd be able to set this right one way or another. What do you think that he, so we watched his first play this week.
Oh, yeah,
which is rough. But really, any first play with Kenny for the most part is rough, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't think he would give it.
You don't?
No. Just based off the first play and me knowing Kenny, I think he would say the same thing you said. Like, it was great for me because I love Harry Potter, but it was bad for me because I'm a gamer. That's what he would say.
It's interesting that he would consider himself a gamer.
That was too generous, I think.
So for now, because we could not agree, but then, yeah, well, we could not agree, so I guess it doesn't get our vote for New Game Plus status.
Right, that's fair. I think it does have to be unanimous.
So it is that time of the week, though, where we're going to randomly select our next game. So we're putting aside Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Sorcerer's Stone, and we are going into a new magical world. Join us as we play for the next 7 days. Another platforming video game. However, this one, instead of being released by EA, was developed and published by a small company called Capcom.
That's their small time.
Based on the Disney animated series of the same name. We've got another based on game.
Wow. I feel like that happens to us sometimes.
It happens to us sometimes. It came out in 1990 for the NES, where you play as two chipmunks on a mission.
Oh, no.
Join us this next week as we play Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Bad.
Bad?
Bad.
Why bad?
I'm not a fan of Chip and Dale.
Nor am I, but Capcom and platformer and Disney and Nintendo. This is going to be a good game, I'm confident.
If it's going to be another DuckTales situation, sure. Let's do it. But.
Well, it's not going to be an exact DuckTales, I doubt. I don't know. There's no way because that one's just music and everything. Well, I don't know. It's Rescue Rangers, it's Chip and Dale. That's a popular name. That is a popular series.
I don't know. Yeah. Why do we have to get two games based off of insert whatever?
Dude, so many of our games are based off of whatever just because they have the money. When it's successful one place, they try to bring it to another place.
It's unfortunate. All right. Join us in Discord this week. Kenny might be there. I don't know. He usually isn't. But you can come and talk to us and to our viewers about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. The link to our Discord is on Twitter and the pinned tweet at the top, and you don't have to do anything but click it. So join us there.
Thank you to all of our patrons on Patreon who support us on a regular basis. A special thank you to our producers, Bradley, Zion, and Gamberino, for your ongoing high-level support. We appreciate and love you. Make sure to find us on social media this week, Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can also go to ngppodcast.com. We should probably start saying that.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Find us on YouTube or on Twitch. We've been streaming some lately. We produce regular video content for your eyes and ears. Listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so you are the first to get new NGP episodes, which are edited and produced by Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
And I'm Nolan.
I'm still Kenny.
That's his voice for sure.
And this has been New Game Plus.